Now, with all the focus on immigration, Supreme Court rulings, and other items in the news, one issue that's been kind of under the radar lately is healthcare, but there's a lot going on. Just this week, President Trump introduced a new insurance option for small businesses. These businesses would be allowed to team up and offer cheaper, stripped-down plans than what the Affordable Care Act allows. Trump told the National Federation of Independent Businesses on Tuesday that the rule would allow small businesses to, quote, escape some of Obamacare's most burdensome mandates.
You're going to save massive amounts of money and have much better health care. It's going to cost you much less. It's going to be, I think, fantastic.
And earlier this month, the Trump administration announced that it would not be defending the Affordable Care Act against a lawsuit brought by 20 Republican-led states. That includes Wisconsin. Plus, members of Congress have various plans in the works, including a bipartisan effort to reduce premiums and a House Republican plan to cut Medicare and Medicaid spending. What does this all mean politically and for the state of health care in America? Phil Rocco is an assistant professor of political science at Marquette University. He's also co-author of Obamacare Wars, Federalism, State Politics, and the Affordable Care Act. Phil, welcome back to Central Time.
Great to be here, Rob.
Let's start with that announcement from the president, these association health plans. How would they work?
So association health plans have actually been around for a long time. They existed before the ACA. In fact, millions of people enrolled in them. And they're basically plans that allow small businesses, groups of small businesses, to pull together to buy insurance. So you could have a group of bakeries, might form a bakery association and buy insurance together. But before the ACA, these plans were pretty unregulated. And what happened was that plans could pick the states where they wanted to follow the regulations. And so as a result, they sold pretty weak insurance products. In many cases, the insurance that was sold in these plans covered none of the services that people needed. And it kind of became a magnet for scam artists. And many of these plans became insolvent. And what ended up happening is that you had a bunch of beneficiaries, I think over 100,000, incurred millions and millions of dollars of medical debt. And so under the ACA, it kind of changed the rules on these plans and basically said, we're now going to treat these as small business plans and we're going to require them to cover all of the law's mandated benefits. So things like prescription drugs, essential health benefits, and things like that. And so what the Trump administration really did this week was to kind of go back to the pre- Obamacare status quo to allow association health plans to sort of be sold almost in the way that they were before the ACA, and that will sort of allow them to exclude coverage for things like prescription drugs, other essential health benefits, and also to sell plans that cover less than 60% of your medical costs.
And presumably they could offer fairly low, comparatively low premiums to the other alternatives that are out there?
Yeah, I think that's the cheers that you're seeing from, I think, both the Trump administration and from small business, right? He was speaking there at the National Federation of Independent Business, is that there's this idea that you're going to be able to offer plans that have much lower premiums. And indeed, some of the projections that have come out will suggest, you know, that the people who enroll in these plans, and I think about 3.2 million people are projected to eventually enroll in one of these plans by 2022, are going to have premiums that are lower by something like 2.9%. And so that's the idea. For the people in those plans, premiums are going to go down. And so there's a sort of positive note that Trump is trying to sound there.
But the downside, you say, is that the coverage might be substantially less than what they might be getting from their current plan.
Right. And I think there's a real question, first, whether or not this is actually going to be something like health insurance at all. Right? Are you actually going to have plans that cover the kinds of medical benefits people have come to expect are included in health insurance, including things like prescription drugs, the cost of which is increasing all the time? But the second, and I think there's a bigger concern here, which is that, and this is kind of complicated, but all of these people who are leaving the individual market that the ACA created and going to association health plans, those people tend to be younger and healthier. That means the people who are left in the individual market tend to be older and sicker. And what that's going to mean is that in the individual marketplace, for the people who are older and sicker and really can't handle those skimpier plans, their premiums are going to shoot up, and you're probably going to see some losses of coverage as a result of the policy change, right? So conservatively, I think the estimates from Avalere Health suggest that you're going to see about 100,000 people losing coverage as a result of this policy change. The other thing is, it's really changing the definition of what health insurance is, right? So we're going back to a sort of pre-ACA definition of plans that look sort of on the surface to consumers like health insurance, but in reality aren't really giving you a lot of the benefits that that you might expect.
Talking to Phil Rocco from Marquette University, co-author of Obamacare Wars, Federalism, State Politics, and the Affordable Care Act, looking at some of the big news in healthcare right now. I want to turn to another story. We might dig into those association health plans a little more. But there's this lawsuit going on, a bunch of states, including Wisconsin, 20 states with Republican state attorneys general, bringing this legal challenge to the Affordable Care Act based on some changes to, I think, tax law that the Republican Congress had passed. What's going on?
This is really complicated, so you'll have to bear with me.
I'll settle in, yeah.
This is part of, I think, the big narrative here, and it's related to association health plans as well, but this is part of a sort of death by a thousand cuts strategy for Republicans, right? So about a year ago, we were looking at Republicans trying and failing to repeal the ACA through Congress. And since they've not been able to do that, they're sort of taking wax at it from every angle that they can. So back in December of last year, Republicans passed this tax cut. And one of the things they did in that tax cut was they zeroed out the penalty that people would have to pay if they didn't buy health insurance in the individual mandate. So they didn't get rid of the mandate, they just got rid of the penalty. So what happened was that earlier this year, after that happened, about 20 Republican state attorneys general, including Brad Schimmel of Wisconsin, filed a lawsuit claiming that because the Supreme Court, when it upheld the individual mandate back in 2012, it said that Congress could do this because of its taxing power. Now that there's no more effective tax penalty, the individual mandate is no longer constitutional. And then they took it one step further and said, because we're arguing that the individual mandate isn't constitutional, then the other provisions of the ACA, two important consumer protection provisions, first the guaranteed issue, the fact that you can't be denied coverage based on pre-existing conditions, and something called community rating, which prohibits insurers from discriminating based on age or other health conditions. Those also have to fall because Congress wouldn't have intended to create those if it didn't have the individual mandate. So that's a lot, a sort of mouthful there, but it's basically sort of attorneys general kind of looking at a political opportunity to make an attack on the ACA that was really set up by what Congress did when it made that tax reform.
And when I want to key in on one point here. When there was that failed effort to completely repeal the Affordable Care Act, one of the most controversial things it seemed like in public opinion was that pre-existing condition coverage. Not all of the Affordable Care Act is popular. That seems to be a popular bit of it. If this lawsuit is successful, and that may be a big if, that pre-existing condition requirements in federal law would go away. Do I have that right?
Yeah, the two things that really make it hard to discriminate against people based on their health status, for instance, the community rating and the guaranteed issue provisions, those would fall. Now, there are two sort of separate parts of the lawsuit. One is really related to the constitutionality of the individual mandate, and the other part of the lawsuit is related to the severability of that individual mandate from the other parts of the law. So it could be the case that they win on one part of the lawsuit and not the other two, but if they win on both, right, the protections that consumers enjoy would go away.
And then the federal government, the Attorney General's office, typically would defend a federal law. They've basically flipped on this, right? They're not defending it anymore.
Yeah, so I will say, Rob, that, you know, I study the Affordable Care Act. I've been working on this for, around 5 years. And I was pretty confused when I saw the initial arguments from the state attorneys general. But the Department of Justice, I think, threw a lot of us who studied this law for a bigger loop, which is that the DOJ usually defends the laws that Congress passes. And unless it can't find any reason to do so, right? If there's no reason in the world why DOJ would do it. And in this case, the DOJ is refusing to defend the lawsuit and instead, or to defend the law and instead filing a brief to support the state attorneys general. And in doing so, it's also making some kind of strange arguments. One of the arguments that it makes, for instance, is that if Congress wanted to sever the other parts of the ACA from the individual mandate, right, if it wanted to say that we still want these other parts of the law, even though we're getting rid of the individual mandate, it could have done so back in December when it passed the big tax cut. The only problem with that is that the tax cut was passed under something called budget reconciliation, and doing something like including a new severability clause wouldn't have been allowed under budget reconciliation rules. So there's some strange arguments in there. But the bigger sort of strange thing here is that the DOJ isn't defending a law that Congress passed, which is really from a sort of rule of law perspective, and the idea that we want to have sort of consistent application of laws that Congress passes. That is a sort of troubling thing.
Talking to Phil Rocco about some of the latest developments on the complicated politics of healthcare. Phil's an assistant professor of political science at Marquette University, co-author of Obamacare Wars, Federalism, State Politics, and the Affordable Care Act. And you can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and your questions. Do you think Wisconsin should be part of this lawsuit aimed at repealing many parts of the Affordable Care Act, including the ones that ensure pre-existing condition coverage requirements? How hopeful are you, worried are you about healthcare and your own future personal coverage? Any thoughts or questions about these association health plans that small businesses could enter into under this new rule from the Trump administration? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about the state of healthcare in the United States and the politics of healthcare with Phil Rocco. He's assistant professor of political science at Marquette University and co-author of Obamacare Wars, Federalism, State Politics, and the Affordable Care Act. A lot going on, a new rule from the Trump administration that would allow groups of small businesses to offer cheaper health care plans with more limited coverage. The Justice Department saying it won't defend Obamacare in court against a lawsuit from 20 states, including Wisconsin. There are other developments out there, too. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you feel about Republican efforts to chip away at the Affordable Care Act? Does the Trump administration have the right idea here with these association health plans from what you're hearing and seeing? What health care change do you need in your coverage? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Phil, big picture, if we change nothing right now, how are we doing on this complicated health care puzzle?
Well, I mean, I think the overall sort of picture that we're looking at here is a law that was passed really as a sort of pragmatic compromise, trying to maintain the sort of private system of insurance, really to satisfy some fiscal conservatives in Congress and also the insurance industry. But what the ACA has really done is it really has kind of satisfied no one. On the right, we've seen the right has really created a sort of political minefield for the ACA at every step and made this fairly moderate policy pretty difficult to implement. But on the other hand, I think there were a lot of folks in Congress at the time the ACA passed and even more today who really think that, the compromise with the private means of providing health care was really not good enough. And I think that especially given the difficulties of implementing the sort of private portion of the ACA and the fact that people are still paying premiums and the price of services, especially things like prescription drugs, is rising, and the ACA didn't really go far enough to change that. I think that's left a lot of folks on the left in Congress and also a lot of consumers kind of cold to the ACA. And so there's a kind of push for doing something more, right, whether that be sort of Bernie Sanders' sort of single-payer approach or approach proposed by other Democrats and sort of liberal think tanks like the Center for American Progress, something called Medicare Extra. But there's, in a sense, still some it's not as if the Democrats are just sort of embracing this and saying this is the greatest policy in the world. We're done with health reform. And so the politics here are I think, kind of frustrating in part because the ACA wasn't sort of an immediate smash hit, you might say, with the people that it was supposed to be a smash hit for.
I want to bring on our callers now. Pat is with us in Three Lakes. Pat, hi.
Hi. You know, I've heard these conversations before, and we're all fighting a losing battle here because we're fighting against a Congress that's controlled by the Republican Party right now. And there are some good Republicans. I'm not saying there isn't, but Obama tried to do Obama tried to do a good thing. He had a good heart with the fact that pre-existing diseases wouldn't put you bankrupt, and you wouldn't, because you got sick, you wouldn't have to give up your life. Those were all good things. But we all know that we can do single payer in this country. We're the richest country ever known to human beings. We're capable, very capable of doing this, but our politicians are controlled by money, period.
Pat, thanks a lot for the call. Phil, he's saying he's making the case there for single payer. It's being talked about definitely in this election campaign.
Yeah, it is, and I think that this is one issue where a lot about when you ask voters what they think of it, a lot depends on how you, of course, frame it, but. You know, there's been a sort of outpouring of, I think, support for some of the core ideas about single payer. The idea that you wouldn't necessarily have to pay anything when you walk in to the doctor's office, right? That's a huge sort of attraction to the plan. I think the other longer-term political trend is that one of the big barriers to doing major health reform in the United States has been people who have employer-sponsored coverage. And the idea is that single payer is this very uncertain thing that people wouldn't necessarily want to give up their employer-sponsored coverage for. But in recent years, we've seen increasing sort of cost shifting from employers to employees. Plans have become overall sort of less affordable for people. The price of healthcare services keeps rising. And so it might be the case that the long-term economic trends push a greater level of support for single payer. As the caller suggested, there is also a lot of pushback to single payer in part from parts of the both the insurance industry and the hospital associations and medical associations that kind of fear a greater level of government involvement and regulation, but it might be the case that both the economics and sort of public opinion is pushing in that direction.
I want to bring on one more quick call. Kelly is with us in Cascade. Kelly, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I want to piggyback on the prior caller. I totally support a single payer. I've been in healthcare, working in healthcare for the past 25 years. I've traveled extensively to other countries, and they put us to shame in terms of access to care. I think one of the hugest, biggest stressors for, you know, every normal family is, oh my God, you know, what if my family needs health care and I can't provide? And I work for a reputable healthcare company right now, and the deductible that my family pays is $8,000 out of pocket before we can. That's our deductible.
Kelly, thanks for the call. We're just about out of time, Phil. This issue isn't going away between now and Election Day, is it?
No, I think that I think you're seeing this in the primaries on the Democratic side, is that single payer is becoming a really important position that Democrats are having, you know, large incentives to take a stand on and sort of be on the right side of the issue, so to speak. So I don't think it's going away, and I don't think the issue of health reform is going away either. It's when you ask voters what they think the most important issue is going into 2018, healthcare is, depending on the poll you look at, number one or number two. So this is going to be an issue that we're going to be dealing with for the foreseeable future.
Phil, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Phil Rocco is an assistant professor of political science at Marquette University and co-author of the book Obamacare Wars, Federalism, State Politics, and the Affordable Care Act. We talked with him about some recent developments in U.S. healthcare policy, including a new announcement from the Trump administration just this week.